From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the legislature ends session with unfinished business. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on the failed Women's Equality Act, and we'll have reaction to the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The legislature left Albany last week with some unfinished business. They did not agree on Governor Cuomo's Women's Equality Act, and Cuomo now says at least one House should return to pass some of the bill's provisions. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
In the final days of the session, the numbers 9 and 10 became key points of discussion over Governor Cuomo's Women's Equality Act. Cuomo's 10-point package includes an abortion rights provision. It would codify into state law the protection spelled out in the U.S. Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. The other 9 points deal with items like a crackdown on sexual harassment and human trafficking and equal pay for women. The Assembly approved Governor Cuomo's original bill of all 10 points in one package. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver spoke just after the vote.
We did women New Yorkers the simple honor of voting on the agenda, the entire agenda.
The Senate, though, acted on just 9 of the 10 measures. Senate Republicans did not want to vote on the 10th provision on abortion rights. Governor Cuomo made it easier for the Senate to at least act on the other 9 items by breaking his Equality Act down into 10 separate bills.
Vote all 10! Vote all 10!
Up until the final hours of the session, a coalition of women's groups maintained that all 10 points of the Equality Act needed to be approved and that just passing the other 9 was not enough. Tracy Brooks, with Family Planning Advocates, appeared at the news conference with Speaker Silver after the Assembly approved the 10-point version, including abortion rights.
We are not 9/10. 9 is not enough. And the Assembly, we thank you with the greatest heart.
But after the Senate passed the other 9 provisions, Brooks and others in the Women's Coalition completely reversed their position. They asked the Assembly to go back and vote on the 9 provisions separately so that the 2 houses would have matching bills. In a statement, Family Planning Advocates said women deserve every step forward the legislature has the opportunity to provide them. The Assembly adjourned without voting. Brooks explains why her group and others changed their tactics.
There's very real merit in the provisions that passed the Senate that have never seen the light of day over in that House until this year to actually be signed into law for the women of the state of New York, and that we will not rest until the 10th provision is passed. And we, you know, ask them to be our partners in that.
Governor Cuomo, who'd been working closely with the women's groups and who had never completely ruled out accepting only the other 9 provisions, also urged the Assembly to come back.
The 9 laws we did pass really make a difference for women, and they have to become a reality, and I'm sure they will.
But not all of the women's groups agree that it's now the Assembly's move. NARAL Pro-Choice New York says it's the Senate that should come back and vote on the 10th abortion rights provision instead. The group's Andrea Miller says the other 9 tenets should not be separated out.
The real question now is, will state senators step up? They have options. They can come back and pass the 10th point to protect a woman's right to choose and send that whole package over to the Assembly, or they could pass what the Assembly passed, which is the full 10-point agenda.
And Democratic women in the Assembly also say they don't want the abortion piece separated out from the rest of the Women's Equality Act. Assembly Speaker Silver was called down to a meeting with Governor Cuomo along with the Democratic women in the Assembly shortly before the session ended. Afterward, he said he would not rule out a return to vote on the other 9 provisions of the Women's Equality Act separately.
You know, the day is not magic.
The women's groups will meet to try to repair any rifts over whether all 10 provisions must be voted on or whether 9 are enough for now. But one thing they do agree on, they say they'll make abortion rights an election issue in the 2014 races if nothing's done. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, as we just heard from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt, the legislature left Albany last week and did not agree on Governor Cuomo's Women's Equality Act. Share your thoughts on this.
Well, you know, I always worry about all of this, David, in that people say they want something. I'm never sure what they really want. I do know that the Republicans in the state Senate said that they did not want to codify the Roe versus Wade abortion assurances here in New York State. They said that that would cause more abortion. Many people, including me, think it's nonsense. But they had their way. They got burned, the Republicans, when they voted for the gun law, the SAFE Act. And they got threatened by the Conservative Party, who said they would run primaries against them. Nevertheless, there's still fewer Republicans than there are Democrats in the whole state Senate. And thanks to a jerry-rigged deal with 4 so-called traitors to the Democrats, they have a majority. The traitors now were in, Jeff Klein, were in a terrific pressure. So they put up some kind of an amendment, a hostile amendment. It went down by 1 vote. They didn't get the abortion bill on the floor, in which case it would have passed. The same old nonsense that in a democracy, everybody deserves a vote. You don't get one. The governor says he's all for it, and yet did he call the wayward Democrats in to yell at them and tell them that he was going to make sure that all the Democrats were together on this? No, I don't think it really happened, although I suspect they spoke. What I'm saying here, David, is if they wanted this thing passed, the Democrats, they would have gotten it passed.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Now that the U.S. Supreme Court has overturned the federal law that defined marriage as a heterosexual union, the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas gathered reaction.
Brad Hayes is an assistant professor of political science at Union College. He says the interesting ruling was expected by people who had been watching the oral arguments closely.
The court today basically said that the idea that the federal government can impose restrictions against a group that a state such as New York, had sought to protect, violates kind of basic principles of due process and equal protection. And as such, same-sex couples that are married under state law will then be treated the same for the purposes of federal law.
U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, issued a statement saying in part that every loving, committed couple deserves the basic human right to get married, start a family, and be treated equally under the law. No politician from this day forward should try to stand in the way of this fact. GOP Hudson Valley Congressman Chris Gibson weighed in as well.
My view on this is marriage is a religious matter. It should be for religious institutions to decide. I support civil unions and equal protection under the law. And at this point, the Supreme Court has spoken.
Reverend Bill Benucci, executive director of the New York Faith and Freedom Coalition, says his group sees the DOMA decision as a call to double its efforts to teach about the sanctity of what it calls authentic marriage.
And the need to make God's design for marriage and family once again the primary order for a peaceful and prosperous society. The next generation is really depending on us. So the Supreme Court is wrong. It was wrong on Roe v. Wade, and after many years of teaching truth, we've turned many hearts to the pro-life position, and so it will be with authentic marriage, and we're committed to the process.
At the opposite end of the opinion spectrum, Danielle Moody Mills. She is an advisor for the Center for American Progress on LGBT Policy and Racial Justice.
As a African-American lesbian, this is a huge day for equality. It means that my marriage and the marriages of hundreds of thousands of Americans are recognized by our government.
Do you see this ruling as a catalyst for additional social change?
Absolutely. This has been a really interesting week in terms of Supreme Court decisions. On one hand, we have a Supreme Court that struck down a part of a very vital Voting Rights Act, essentially kind of ruled in favor of voter suppression based on race. And then on the other hand, the next day, you have them vote in favor of equality and recognition for all Americans.
Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, a Democrat, issued a statement saying that freedom includes keeping government out of people's most personal and intimate choices and affirming human dignity. Tullyrinke PLLC attorney Jennifer Corcoran explains how the DOMA decision relates to New Yorkers.
As soon as we legalized marriage in the state, all state benefits became entitlements to anyone legally married. So that extended then to same-sex couples. What the problem and the disconnect has been is that DOMA prohibited the extension of federal benefits to people living in New York who were validly married in the state of New York as a same-sex couple.
In the wake of the DOMA decision, 11 national LGBT advocacy organizations have jointly issued a series of fact sheets to provide guidance to same-sex couples and their families as they navigate accessing federal rights, benefits, and protections. There's a link at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court will review an appeals court ruling that overturned the Environmental Protection Agency's cross-state air pollution rule. Two Adirondack environmental groups say the move is crucial for the long-term health of the region's ecosystem. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
In August 2012, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia struck down the Environmental Protection Agency's cross-state air pollution rule in a 2-to-1 decision. The lower court determined that the EPA had exceeded its authority by imposing, quote, massive emissions reduction requirements, unquote, on power plants in upwind states. The Obama administration appealed, and on Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to hear the case. Adirondack environmental groups had lobbied for implementation of the cross-state air pollution rule. Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says the council had called for an appeal of the lower court decision.
We believe that the rule itself was valid when it was written and that the lower court had overlooked some things. The dissenting judge had issued a 26-page dissent in this case and made a very solid case that the Supreme Court obviously took notice of for why this rule should be reinstated. So we're very hopeful that the court will not only take up the case, but they will overturn the decision of the lower court.
Adirondack Mountain Club Executive Director Neil Woodworth explains that the rule was needed to close a loophole in the Clean Air Act.
Unfortunately, a large number of coal-burning plants built in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s were grandfathered when the Clean Air Act was enacted in 1977. And although they toughened the Clean Air Act in 1990, they still left a big, fat loophole for the energy industry to keep running coal-burning power plants without air pollution control devices. This cross-states, interstate rule would have closed that big loophole.
Woodworth says that if the High Court upholds the cross-state air pollution rule, deep cuts will be required in sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, and mercury emissions.
It would mean the end of acid rain.
The Supreme Court will assess the Court of Appeals' jurisdiction in the matter, the state's roles in prohibiting emissions and interstate pollution obligations, and whether the EPA properly determined the significance of upwind emission contributions to each state.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. Two environmental groups are calling on New York State officials to better implement a sewage pollution notification law. State officials, meanwhile, say they're implementing the law in phases. More from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Riverkeeper and Citizens Campaign for the Environment are calling on the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to fully implement a law passed during the 2012 legislative session. Tracy Brown is a water quality advocate for Westchester-based Riverkeeper.
What the DEC has implemented for the phase one, what they're calling phase one implementation of sewage right to know, is not consistent with what the law is calling for.
Brown contends the Sewage Pollution Right to Know Act, signed by Governor Andrew Cuomo in August of 2012, calls for incident reporting of combined sewer overflows and reporting this information in an easily accessible way to the public.
That doesn't mean put up a blanket statement on the website that say they exist and where they are. It means tell the public when they open and when they discharge. And they're saying, well, we don't have the technology on all of these outfalls to really be able to say when they open and when they don't, which is true, but everybody knows that they're designed to open when it rains. When it rains and a lot of rainwater gets into these combined systems, they bypass. That's how they're designed.
She says an advisory should go out just to be cautious and stay in effect for 24 to 48 hours.
You say it rained, so we have reason to believe that there's sewage in the water. There's an advisory in effect now for these waterways.
A DEC spokeswoman says the first component of the law went into effect May 1st, by which publicly owned treatment works and sewer systems must notify DEC and the state health department of all raw or partially treated discharges within 2 hours of when they occur. The law requires DEC to provide general public notice only for discharges that may present a threat to public health, considering the potential for exposure and other relevant factors. Brown notes the Hudson River is majorly impacted, with combined sewer overflow systems in the Capital District communities of Albany, Cohoes, Green Island, Rensselaer, Troy, and Watervliet. There are also such systems in Hudson, Catskill, Kingston, Poughkeepsie, Newburgh, and Yonkers.
And Riverkeeper really thinks, and we've seen this in other parts of the country, that when someone's going out from their home to recreate and they turn on the radio station to get that environmental condition report, they want to hear, is there traffic between me and my swimming hole? Is there an ozone alert? Is there a smog alert? Is there a heat advisory? They should also get a water quality advisory in that same news chunk.
She hopes the act will be fully implemented by the 2014 swimming season. The DEC spokeswoman says a second component of the law requires publicly owned treatment works and sewer systems to notify the public directly when discharges occur. DEC is developing regulations and evaluating computerized notification systems for this portion of the law. She says one that looks promising is the NY Alert system. DEC plans to release the draft regulations this fall for public comment. Currently, information on discharges received from public wastewater systems is available on a DEC webpage. DEC also has a webpage for the location of combined sewer overflows. Riverkeepers Brown alleges the information presented is often not timely and lacks critical details such as the quantity of sewage that overflowed. The DEC spokeswoman says the agency will prepare an annual report of discharges, including the total number, the volume, and duration of such discharges and the remedial responses, if any. You may access these DEC links at wamc.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
New York State's Public Service Commission is considering the future of the coal-fired power plant in the town of Lansing, a 10-minute drive from Ithaca. As the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports, the debate says a lot about the challenges the state will face if it's serious about switching to new sources of power.
Cayuga Power Plant's operations manager, John Cooper, is showing me the path each load of coal takes from the trains that bring it in through to the two turbines that produce the electricity. Only one of the turbines was running on this early spring afternoon.
It's a day-to-day decision. If the economics are there, we would run it.
Cooper is referring to the price of coal compared to the price of natural gas. Coal plants just can't compete with natural gas ones because of the boom in natural gas production in the United States. In 2012, the plant's owners, Upstate New York Power Producers, filed a request with the state to close the plant down. The state determined that there is a need for the up to 300 megawatts of power produced there, so it added a surcharge to local bills to keep it open. The owners then had to submit a plan to transition off of coal. The plan they submitted included four options for switching to natural gas, ranging in price from $60 to $370 million. The plant's chief operating officer, Jerry Goodnow, says the alternative, closing the plant, would mean power has to be imported into the area.
That energy is going to get produced from someplace, and there's a cost to that, and we think we can do it very inexpensively.
But not everyone believes that the state even needs all 300 megawatts. The State Business Council and seven environmental groups co-signed a letter to the Public Service Commission calling for the closure of the plant. Lisa Dix is from one of the co-signers of the letter, the Sierra Club.
Are we just going to remain stuck in a dirty energy past and continue to build out a dirty energy infrastructure that is going to last generations when really we have to make the hard decisions now to move to a renewable energy future?
Dick says the power produced in Lansing could be replaced with renewable sources, increased transmission, and a focus on energy efficiency. But closing the plant would be a hard decision, especially for the town of Lansing. Lansing Supervisor Kathy Miller has submitted comments to the PSC calling for a switch to natural gas. She says that renewable sources of energy just aren't available yet to replace the plant.
Hopefully, we would, as a county and as a state, be working towards sustainability. So I look at this as an interim. And obviously, as I said, it affects our tax base.
In 2012, the plant paid $1.7 million to the town schools, about 10% of the district's revenues. The school district's business administrator, Mary June King, says losing that contribution would make the loss of programming much more likely.
Do we cut kindergarten? Everybody knows it's the best thing for kids. But, you know, when we have to make those choices, it's got to be paid for.
And like many of the towns in Tompkins County, the town of Lansing has a moratorium on hydrofracking. Supervisor Miller acknowledges the contradiction in opposing natural gas exploration in the town while supporting its use at the power plant. But she points to the ban on drilling in the New York City watershed as a reason to ban it around the Finger Lakes.
And I just feel there should almost be the zone around the lakes where, no matter what, drilling isn't allowed.
The state is expected to make its decision by the end of the year. County legislator Carol Chalk wants the PSC to expand the options.
The way this issue is being framed is pitting town against town. It is pitting the need to continue our tax base against those to create renewable energy.
Chalk says the state should reduce the amount of power needed from the Cayuga plant and let them come up with a plan to produce some from solar and hydropower and some from other locations in the county. In Ithaca, I'm Matt Richmond for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1326 or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.